Let's just repeat that. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart. One more time. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song.
Let's just continue to listen for a sec. Dear God, thank you for listening to us. Thank you for listening to us when we need you, and thank you for being there when speaking to us when we listen. Amen. Does this sound good? Okay. So thank you all for, well, it sounds, feels really loud. Okay. For your feedback and all the things I'm hearing about what you're pulling from my talks, I really loved that. Behind you, Dana, what's your name again?
Jonathan.
I knew it was a J, but I didn't want to guess the wrong one. Jonathan mentioned that just as we have the prayer laboratory, that relationships can be like communication laboratories. And that's kind of what I was talking about last time. That there's a chance there to explore and try new things, and that hopefully in a family or a close work relationship or intimate relationship, that that's a safe space to explore some of those ideas of communication, building, and also to be vulnerable. And also then Carol Jones was recognizing that this ask culture that I was talking about is not the dominant cultural norm in a lot of places, and so that can mean you can step on a lot of people's toes if you're just taking the last piece of pie every time. So I think just the opportunity is to build that open culture with whoever is close enough to you that you can do that, create agreements around how you're going to interact so that you're not always stepping on someone else's toes, but that you can start to be clearer about your agreements. So that's just some of the feedback and sort of further expanding on those ideas. So tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about prayer. So our verse for the night is Mark 11:24. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. So growing up in CFO, prayer was normalized as the deepest part of my faith expression. That was sort of before youth groups, before Bible studies, before even regular church service, I learned about prayer from my prayer group leaders in CFO camps. I learned about Agnes Sanford and the Healing Light, about, if you knew Dorothy Olson, she was always telling her prayer groups to hug trees. So it was just like about silent prayer and meditation from the morning, about praying, meditation on Bible verses. So this was all just sort of how I learned about prayer was through CFO. My parents even had a regular prayer group that's pretty much just like a camp prayer group, a group of friends who would get together once a week and have sort of an hour of sharing and praying together, lots of silent time. So this was just how I knew how to be a person of faith, was to live in this prayer. And then acknowledging answered prayer too, because if you're always asking, you're going to see some results. So my dad was known to exclaim, "I love answered prayer." And again, that's just that recognizing of like, I'm having fun. This is going well. Prayers are being answered. And then you can start to see the pattern. And that's why I say also, that's another JFO miracle or another CFO miracle, because those miracles are, little miracles are happening all the time at camp. Things just come together perfectly. And so it's fun to acknowledge that when it happens. So So how and why do I pray? I sort of, as I've been thinking about the preparing for these talks, thinking about what do I actually do? How does my prayer work? Because it works different with everyone. So I like the way that A.J. Herschel puts it, prayer is sort of dreaming in league with God. A dreaming in league with God. So we're there, we're dreaming together. So it's more powerful than my own dreaming, but it still is, you know, as vast as a dream. And for me, part of that dreaming in league with God, that's a very intimate relationship for me, a very close relationship between God and me. And so I think that's partly why the Psalms were the first parts of the Bible that really spoke to me, because it's such an intimate call. It's such an intimate relationship with God. It's, you know, you are my rock. Why are you not there for me? I need you. Thank you for saving us. It's just so much of this call and answer about this relationship with God and how much intimate love and, you know, how much we're bound up together with God. Another part is, for me, that intimacy with God and with Jesus is communion. And as I said, I didn't go to regular church services growing up, but I'll talk more about my church journey and in one of the other talks, but communion has come to be one of my favorite parts of the service. And for me, it's just, first of all, I love to host parties. I don't know if anyone else does. Pam said that she didn't like to host, but I really like to have everyone over, you know, get everything ready. We cook up a fabulous dinner, have maybe do a potluck. So I like to think about communion as sort of like a dinner party with Jesus, because it's, you know, the idea is this Last Supper, it's like, hey, let's all get together, let's go into this room, let's do something that's really intimate together, let's have this time together. And so I like to think about that when I'm taking communion. Maybe that's sort of irreverent, but it's like also just noticing that intimacy. And I notice that when we are giving communion in church, when we're receiving it, there's that blessing to each other. It's, you know, if you, in my church, when I did do it, you take one of the little cups and you pass the tray on to the next person. And so in that way, you are, each person has a chance to bless someone else. Maybe you come up to the front and then you are blessed by one of the elders in the church. But it's a chance to really give a blessing and to pray for each other. And I notice that that's not always the case in church. There are a few times that are carved out to pray and pray for each other and bless each other. So for me, that communion is that deep, intimate community part of the church. I don't have it who it's attributed to, but I have a quote here. In prayer, I express my deepest self to a God who understands. So I think that's part of the intimacy is, I'll read it again. In prayer, I express my deepest self to a God who understands. So it's someone who knows me so well that I can come with whatever I'm asking, whatever need I have, even if it's as silly as no traffic on the road to camp. I firmly believe in that, and my car mate on the way to Pacific Woods said, you think that's really going to work? I said, well, why not? And of course, it was totally clear, so it was another little miracle, but, you know, I didn't try to rub it in his face too much. So one of the things that, when I'm going into my prayer time to establish that intimacy, I build the connection. And one of the things I had on my wall, a little plaque when I was growing up, was a little horse. And it said, I don't know why it was a horse, but it had a little, know ye not that ye are the temple of God and the Spirit of the Lord dwelleth within, in the old language. And so that was just something that was, I repeated in my head, know ye not that ye are the temple of God and the Spirit of the Lord dwelleth within. And for me, that's just, I can have this intimate prayer because the Spirit of the Lord is already within me. It's as intimate as just looking inside myself. So sometimes I'll put like a hand on my stomach or a hand on my chest, hand on my stomach and chest, and just sort of feel that intimacy, that Spirit of the Lord within me. And for a while, we were at a Quaker church, and they talk about the Quaker light within. And so that also resonated with me a lot, that there's that light within me, and that is the Spirit, and there's light within everyone, and that's the Spirit. So besides these prayers of intimacy, of calling on God, of dreaming in league with God, and I've mentioned it already a lot before, but letting go and finding peace within my body is a huge form of prayer for me. That's a big category of what I'm doing. In college and university, I found at the end of my senior year, I was writing my senior thesis. I was stressed about what was going to happen next. I was taking way too many classes. And there was a point in the semester when I just was like realized my body was not comfortable. I was in pain. I would notice I wouldn't be breathing. Like, I would just be like, and go like, why? I'm not, like, how did I forget to breathe there for a while? Like, how am I still holding my breath? And so it just was this stress anxiety that was manifesting within my body. Like, I was just holding it so much, holding myself. And so that led to holding my breath. And it built up in my muscles so that my core muscles were not the good kind of strong, but were like the overly tight kind of like not strong, knotted, not, yeah, K-N-O-T, thank you. So it was a deeply painful moment of, you know, sort of crisis. It hit a point where I just like, I can't deal with this anymore. I still need to finish my thesis. I still need to finish my classes, but I'm going to have to get right with my body because I can't keep living with this. My muscles had learned that tension. We learn very well to hold wherever we hold. So, you know, for some people it's in their shoulders. And when you can just go like, oh, wow, I can have so much more neck when I do that. And if I can even stand up off my torso more if I think about it, or I can be down like this. So it's just like releasing that stress out of my body and practicing that so that I, you know, notice when I'm holding my breath, let it go so that it doesn't keep hold of that sort of that tension. So I'm much better now. I don't, you know, have the pain when I sit down. I don't have the problem of holding my breath. But when I do notice stress, you know, when I, like I said, when I'm waiting for the streetcar or if I can't carry all my groceries home, my body just gets sort of in a crisis mode, I can start asking, okay, what's going on now? Like, what can I do so I can relax? What can I stop, breathe, and then move on? I really like the breathing exercise we've been doing in rhythms of breathing in God, breathing out love, breathing in Jesus, breathing out light, breathing in Spirit, breathing out life. And just I'm going to use that one because it's just three breaths and it can just reset all my tension. And so I have my whole cadre of release prayers that I do. I've already talked let go and let God. Do that a lot. Singing just songs in general. I mean, not only CFO songs, but just any song, you know, turning it up, cranking it, that's a big release. Mini dance parties at home, whether it's like with Boyd or just like turning on some great disco and just like sort of dancing around the house. That's huge amounts of like, after that, I just can't be the same amount of stressed anymore. So it has to get out of my body, out of my chair. Journaling, writing stuff down, as Pam mentioned, that journal practice can be a real way to move to the positive, and also as a way to, for me, it's also a surrender. It's a complete, when I write something down on paper, I can't keep going over it anymore. One of the communication techniques I talked about yesterday was only tell the story once. Well, sometimes I don't even have to tell the story out loud to anyone. When I start writing it down, I can realize that, you know, this is a finite problem. I can deal with this. I can release this to God once it's down, and I don't have to keep going over it. When we were getting ready to go to Africa last summer, I began to consciously work on how I was going to be comfortable when I was there the whole time, because it's very, the travel is really difficult. You know, you're on crowded buses, you're on plane flights for days, literally days, like three red eyes in a row. And so I was like, okay, I have to get a better handle on this before I go, because I do not want to be in pain the whole time I'm there. I just can't do all my work and not be comfortable. So I was doing yoga classes at the time, and part of the yoga breath is being comfortable no matter what position you're in. Like, you're holding the tree position, but you're still supposed to like have a nice, even, calm breath. Of course, that doesn't always happen, but that's the goal. So it's like, okay, I can practice that. I can be squished in between like 15 people with like dried fish and chickens and still just be like, you know, that was the goal. Maybe didn't work all the time, but you know, having those practices of knowing that even when it's crazy, I can breathe, is an important part of my prayer, because when my body is comfortable, then I can connect. I can be aware. I can be participating in what's directly around me. Maybe you've noticed that, like, when you're in pain, it's hard to pay attention to anything else. And that means, you know, praying and listening to God, discerning is not happening all that much. Is Eric here? This one's for you. So I don't have little bitty gnomes in my prayer life, but I do have some angels that have been swirling around my prayer life. When I was little, you know, I was pretty afraid of the dark, kind of those generic things, but, you know, pretty paralyzed. I would want my sister to sleep in my bed with, share my, you know, our bunk bed so that I wouldn't have to be alone. And so we, you know, my parents would pray with me before we went to bed, you know, ask us to be safe surrounding our house and life, light surrounding our neighborhood and light surrounding, you know, just widening circles of light. And then we also had our angels. And so my angels were Shubba and Baba. And my sister, who's a little bit younger, she had the unfortunate angel names of Dee Dee Dada and Dodo. Dear Suzanne. So one of the dreaming imaginary prayers that I use often is imagining a river flowing. And I love that song, Flow Like a River, Flow Free. It's just a complete washing, a flowing river. Cheryl Monroe told me that perfection is being in the flow. Perfection is not planning, it's just being in the flow. So when I get caught up in preparing, when I get caught up in trying to organize or control things, release to being in the flow. When I get caught up in trying to know things that are unknowable, go back to that flow. So just for a second, notice, like, think about all the things that you are worrying about at home. Think about, like, work emails that are not getting done. Think about, like, making sure your pets and kids and parents are all being taken care of. And then how does that feel in your body? Does anyone else kind of, like, tense up into your stomach, kind of feel icky, and do you sort of, like, go like this? So then I just imagine a river going over me, and just like, oh. Flow like a river, flow free. And when I think about a river, it's sort of impossible for me to stay crunched up like that. So that lets me feel that spirit just washing over me, that comfort. I read a really fascinating book last year called When God Talks Back. And it was about, it was by an anthropologist who did some work did some cultural anthropology in the Vineyard Church, which is not a denomination I was familiar with, but it's very different from my experience. But I appreciated the way that she could talk about sort of their experience of prayer and turn that into words that I could understand. So one of the things that she talked about was that prayer is a practice. It's a skill, actually. And so that people's experiences of prayer changed over time and with practice. So with people who did sensory prayer, imaginative prayers, who were focusing 30 minutes a day for a month on mental imagery of the Lord is my shepherd and going through that psalm or the Christmas story, going through the imagery of, okay, now you are in that pasture. Now you can hear the water. You're with the sheep. You see the shepherd. When you're imagining that repeatedly, it becomes more and more easy to recall that peace, that stillness. And so it's much easier to slip into that dreaming in league with God about being here now, about the restful retreats, in the midst of a crazy world. So I like just that people who practice that regularly, it got easier. You could do it. You could slip into it much easier. And I think that that's true with other forms of prayer, too. I know that with silent meditation, if I do it a lot, then it gets easier. And I think also when you speak aloud prayers, if you do that often, the words flow more easier. More easier? Easier. But so for me, that was just a realization of the worthwhileness of practicing prayer, of keeping open to that, even if I'm not seeing a result I like. So this morning we did one of my favorite kinds of prayer with Rosemary. We did a daydreaming prayer, really. Glenn Clark had a pamphlet, The Way, the Truth, and the Life, about daydreaming prayer, about this imaginative prayer. It's basically just putting positive energy into something, imagining the goal that I'm aiming for. So that, again, it's a dreaming in league with God, daydreaming with God, using this dreaming as a form of prayer so that the prayer, the focus is so completely like bathed in love and released to God. It's that surrender, again, that Pam is talking about. It's not just pleading. It's a complete release because it's just there with God. It's just a dream. And for me, this is, it's a really powerful form of prayer. It's about getting rid of the worry parts of prayer, about the frantic prayers that like, please don't let this happen, to more just, this is what I want, this is what I'm hoping for, God, this is what I'm praying for. Sort of Neville Goddard talks about imaginative prayer, and he talks about it as thinking from the end or entering into a wish fulfilled. So praying from that point of the wish being fulfilled, of thinking from the end of the prayer, of getting to that point. So I had a chance to use this when we were in Africa last year. We were in Kenya, sort of the very middle of our trip, and our last chance to check email before going to a week in Uganda. We got an email. My dad, who had been taking care of our cat, I have to do my family photos too. There's Hazel. We got an email from my dad saying that Hazel got out of the house. She's usually an indoor cat. She doesn't respond well, as I already mentioned. And she got out a few days ago. They had done everything they could to get her in, and they couldn't find her. Couldn't find her anywhere. Left the doors open. Left food on the patio. Water. She hadn't used her litter box. And partly it's just devastating because we're so far away. We're in the midst of this crazy experience. Partly is also, not more, just like about a year after Quill left. So, of course, I'm like, I don't deserve to have cats. They just keep running away from me. Just that sort of like, oh, I can't do this. And of course, we had just had breakfast. It was like 6 in the morning. We were all up early to drive to Uganda with our other Kenyan partners. And I just, was devastated and realized that there was absolutely nothing I could say to the group that would be appropriate at that time. I mean, we're surrounded by people who are doing really meaningful work around people who are caring for orphans. We're at an orphanage or at training centers, and I couldn't say, you know, my cat just left. That it didn't feel like it was even a place to be able to express that sadness. And so I just went back to our room, cried for about 5 minutes, and then, you know, we got the call, you know, Tanya, it's time to go. So it's like, okay, here we go. We have to go. We're going off. You know, we're going to have no internet for the next week. There's nothing I can do except for give the number of our vet to my dad and hope to hear the best. And so for me, the only thing I could do at that moment, knowing that there was nothing else I could do, is just that surrender prayer, that release, going to the point of, God, Hazel is in your hands, and, you know, when we get back, I hope I hear some good news. We were gone for a week, didn't have any internet access, so couldn't check. Get back to Kampala, and my dad was leaving that next day for a trip, and so my sister was going to come in and take care of Hazel. And so it was another transition point, a point of we didn't, you know. So I was corresponding then with my sister about, had she found anything? No. So we get home from Africa, we finally land, and we'll go back to my parents' house where Hazel had been staying, and just felt, you know, kind of quiet. And it by then had been 2 weeks since she had been gone. And Hazel is not a scavenger. She has no front claws. She was declawed before we got her. She's not, you know, she's not a rambunctious kitty. So we're just sitting there. The second day, it's like, okay, Hazel's gone. And then, of course, in she walks in the door. It's like, Hazel, yay, yeah, she's back. It was insane. That cat just came out of nowhere. And so I don't even know what to say, but it was a moment of going through that process of the release of the prayer and then having her come back was like, there she is. It's all just as I expected. How am I doing? So I've been practicing this imaginary prayer also recently. The Neville Reader is where I got that quote about imaginative prayer and thinking from the end. We have some friends who are going through a tough time in their relationship. And so I just started putting this imaginative prayer into practice. The way that Neville talks about it is just to imagine them calling you on the phone. Imagine that with everything having been resolved, imagine that joy in their voice as they tell you how everything has been resolved. And then focus on that joy for them. So I just imagine calling me up saying, it's so wonderful. We've just worked everything out. Things are going so well. We completely understand each other now. This is, you know, we've really reached a new place. And so I just, like, imagine hearing that voice, hearing that joy. And that's sort of my thinking from the end. That's that holding on to that joy, that positive feeling, that dreaming with God. And it's still ongoing, but we are seeing results, so it's good. Another big moment of this imaginative prayer working in my life was about a year after I had moved to Toronto, and I was not happy at work. I just had no sort of drive to do anything. I was feeling kind of like every day was kind of just plodding along. I was working from home, and I had in the back of the mind that, you know, like, oh, yeah, it's just I'm lonely at home. I'm sort of wanting some more community. I knew it was a down time of the year. It was February. So, like, in the northern climes, we say don't make any major decisions in February because you're bound to, like, pack up everything and move to Cabo and, like, overnight. maybe you Mainers can relate to that. That was when we were in Minnesota and talked about, like, if we leave right now, we can be in Arizona, like, in 24 hours. So I was knowing that I was uncomfortable, knowing that I didn't like where I was with my job. And so I started with doing journaling sessions. I started talking to people about what I liked and what I didn't like, what wasn't working. And I even then, like, blew the possibilities wide open, as I talked about yesterday, when you don't know, just, like, say, what's the biggest thing that'll work? So I thought, well, maybe I'll go back to school. Maybe I'll totally change careers. You know, it's, like, kind of fun at the moment to think, like, well, maybe I can be a sign language interpreter, and, like, never having done anything like that. Maybe I can be, like, an executive secretary. That'd be fun. Maybe, you know, just, like, completely thinking about new things just so that I wasn't feeling stuck in one bubble. Then my next step was moving to a place of realizing that I could be happy with multiple outcomes. I wasn't only saying that this is the only thing that will work for me. It was really of what can I do with the, what are the widest options that will work for me? That's a form of letting go for me, letting go of one perfect solution. So with my journaling and talking, I realized that the essence of what I need was not necessarily a new job, but I wanted that community. I wanted some sort of interaction outside the home, not just my desk. I wanted a meaningful job. I didn't just want something that was a toss-off. And I was wanting some interaction, and that really came to a head when I was taking the transit, the streetcars, and we pulled into one of the transfer stations, and I saw, like, the streetcar driver, like, get out, and he was, like, just chatting with his friends, and he was, like, they're, like, high-fiving at, like, the little station house. I'm, like, I just, like, actually started to tear up. I was, like, they have colleagues. They have people who they talk to during their breaks. It was just the littlest moment, but I realized I need that interaction. I need to have people who will high-five me when I do something besides myself or the cat, which she doesn't look like she's going to be very helpful, right? So I did some work, some more research about what might be the solution, and what I found was a co-working space. It's called the Center for Social Innovation in Toronto, and it's the co-working space means that many people are members. We all pay a member fee, and then I get to use one of the open desks for a certain number of hours a month. So I pay for 60 hours a month, and I can go in at any time. I have a little set space. I can work there. There's, like, coffee, a little lunch area, tea, photocopy machine, and then I can go home at any time. And it really was, it had all those things. It had community. It was outside my home. It was working with a bunch of people who were also doing meaningful jobs, who were working in social innovation in the city, around the world, who are also doing socially minded activities. And it had the interaction, the casual, like, coffee talk interaction that I was wanting. I could just, like, walk over to the coffee and go, like, hey, how's it going? And then go back to my desk. And it really has been all that I wanted and more. I've made some really good close friends there. I'm surrounded by these people who are really interested in storytelling, so I've been, like, going to storytelling events and learning about that, and it made it so I didn't need as much office space at home. I just have a teeny little desk now. I can get all the coffee and tea I want, lots of options. But really, it's just, and there's a salad club every Wednesday. We all bring, they provide the lettuce and the salad dressing, and everyone brings protein and vegetable options. So it's just a really great space to hang out. It really was the best possible dreaming, co-creating with God, and has been a real saving grace in my life and my work. I do just want to say that I don't think that if you're dreaming with God and then you don't get well, that it's just not, you're not doing it good enough or something like that. If you're, you know, it's not your fault. I don't like the kind of things that you have to do this right, if you're not getting healthy, if you're not perfectly whole, if the person dies that you've been praying for, that, you know, that you just need to practice harder. I think that part of this prayer, part of this release, is being in the flow of whatever is the experience right in front of us. That river flowing means that it can flow in any direction. And so part of the challenge is just being okay with that opportunity for learning and growth that might be presented to us. So the other big aspect of my prayer life is really tied to one of the parts of our... I go to a Unitarian Universalist church, so we don't have creeds, but our creed, not creed, as I call it. Service is our prayer, is one of the lines of the not creed that we say every week. Service is our prayer. That means that my interactions with others, my service to the world, is prayer. It's about intimacy with God and with God's world, God's creatures. Another quote, the real challenge isn't what we're able to do with our eyes closed. It's how we act in our everyday lives. That's mindfulness in action. So the real challenge isn't what we're able to do with our eyes closed. It's about how we act in our everyday lives. Mindfulness in action. And so, perhaps perfectly, I work for an organization called Spirit in Action. It's exactly that. Service is our prayer, mindfulness in action, Spirit in action. Thomas Merton, who I have a particular connection with now that I live on Merton Street, says, the saint is a saint in all situations, even while making no formal reference to God. He said, it can be easy to appear religious by putting Christian label on something, but it's much bigger challenge to live and work in that spirit of goodness. And so for me, that brings around all the things I've been talking about. If you're kind of like, well, what does this communication have to do with the prayer or spiritual journey? That clear communication is all about, how do I live in that spirit of goodness? How do I be a Christian without just saying, hey, look at me, I go to church? And so Martin Luther King says, everyone can be great because everyone can serve. And so again, that goes back to my prayer is service. So I'm going to talk just a little bit in the time we have left about my work with Spirit in Action. You can go to the next one. Spirit in Action was started in 1996, so next year we're going to have our 20th anniversary. Started by Del Anderson, who was a longtime CFOer, and also he was the president of CFOI for a time as well. When he was, I should also say he was born in 1906, right after the earthquake in San Francisco, and so he was raised in some of the relief tents in the city. And then he grew up in Alameda, which is right across the bay. Sort of the classic story of a self-made man, starting with nothing, broken home and mixed racial identity at a time when really that wasn't an easy place to be in. And managed to work first delivering dry cleaning, going around to the back entrances of all the fancy houses in Oakland and Berkeley. Then he managed to buy his own dry cleaning store and then several dry cleaning stores and work his way up to having a network that he then wanted to share that with the world. So when he was part of CFOI, president of CFOI, he created the self-help committee. So that was sort of counterpart, saying like CFOI camps and retreats around the world are really fulfilling people's spiritual needs. And this self-help committee is going to be fulfilling people's material needs around the world as well. So those were counterparts together. Now the program Spirit in Action is completely separate from CFO International, but we have a shared history that way. So our work, Spirit in Action, we have two different programs. One is a small business fund, and that's both of them are really, again, to help people materially, help people find that potential that is within themselves and build their self-sufficiency empowerment. So with a small business fund, families receive $150 US with some training and mentoring, business skills training, workshop. There's a local mentor from that community, and they work with them to start a business, to choose a business that'll work for them, and then build that strength and within the family, build a business. Right now we have programs in Malawi, Uganda, Kenya, and Nigeria with the Small Business Fund program. And I think we've given out, when I just checked, it was over 600 small business grants since we started the program in 2003. So those are all, you know, that's 600 plus families that have received these grants and have been able to start something. The businesses are typically small, maybe starting a chicken project, maybe a grocery kiosk, maybe buying fish and reselling it, growing vegetables. And they're able to be long-term businesses. When we visited Malawi, we saw some that had been in operation for over 10 years. So they are successful. The second aspect of our Spirit in Action programs are community grants in Africa. So that's for a larger community organization, a grassroots organization throughout Africa. We also have programs in Zambia, Ghana, and Uganda, Kenya, and Malawi, community grants that are going to help a larger community that's coming together. These often are 20 to 100, 150 people who are coming together for a larger project, and that could be a savings and loans group to help them access low interest loans within the community. It could be a training program for skills training. Some of the latest grants that we just approved at our meeting a week ago was rent, helping to pay for rent for a sewing training, sewing machine tailoring program in Kenya. Another was for a new training center in Malawi for one of our successful savings and loans groups there. And then also a new beading skills training program also in Nairobi for mothers and widows. So that's just like very basic overview. I have some newsletters that I'll have to share, and there's more on our website, spiritinaction.org. So you can always feel free to ask questions about that work. But really it's as I said, those are sort of the nuts and bolts of our work, but the essence is really about seeing that potential in everyone. And Dell was really passionate about, you know, everyone can be great because everyone can serve, and we can all, everyone has something within them that can be nurtured. And so it's really, I see such passion and dedication in our partners in Africa, and so it's a real honor to serve that, and really humbling to get to go there and not have all the answers and, you know, give up control of any sort of situation where I might not know what's going on. As I said, we're almost 20 years old, so we've been able to be with partners for the very long term. We're not just, you know, coming in, dropping some money or shoes off and then leaving. We've really been with them. And so we've been able to see over the last time we were in Malawi, they were all showing us these electrical boxes that people were building in their houses. And that's because the rural electrification project is finally coming to this rural village in Malawi. They are getting some electricity lines, and they will actually have lights in their houses next time we go and visit. So that means that they'll be able to see after 6 o'clock when it gets dark, because they're, you know, pretty close to the equator. We've also just been able to, we've been building up these local leaders. It's really our small business fund coordinators in each country who are completely taking on the work. I'm just sort of coordinating from afar. They're doing the actual work, and that's a real gift to be able to support these partners, but know that they are really there with the knowledge to do the work. So we give grants and not loans, and maybe you caught that when I was saying, but part of our aspect of how we, what we ask for instead is a pay it forward program. We call it sharing the gift. And the sharing the gift program, where we ask people to give a portion of what they've made or a portion of maybe one of the chickens or maybe a piglet to another family in need, this really grew out of prayer within our board. Our board works on consensus, like council rings, and it was, you know, we got to a point of, should we give loans, should we give grants? We want people to have some sort of return to us for the grant, but, you know, it didn't make sense for us to actually be coordinating loans from the states when we're giving them in Africa. That's just wire fees are going to eat up anything. So we prayed about it, and the solution that we came to was this Pay It Forward program. And it's been a real blessing that people who have not been able to give graciously now have something. When they start their business, when they're a successful business, then they're able to give to someone else. And to be that giver is a real blessing. And it's also special for us because it's a ripple. We receive money from donors. Spirit in Action then gives that money as grants, and then those people then give money to someone else in their community or give something else. So it just keeps rippling out. Part of the services or prayer work of Spirit in Action for me is just being a witness to the success of the businesses, of being able to really affirm people when they are so proud to show us their accomplishments, to show how far they've been able to come since receiving this small grant. You know, they just want us to take a photo, give it, show it somewhere in the U.S., and we also send them a copy, and they're just so happy to sort of make that international connection. So this is Paul here, Paul Lungu, in Malawi. This is, he received a grant, I think 5 or 6 years ago, to start a shoemaking business. And he was really desperate when that happened. We went and visited his house, and he told us a story of, you know, before I received this grant, before I knew Kanan, who was a local coordinator in Malawi, I was, I was living in a trash heap. I was a complete bum. He's like, I didn't have faith. I didn't have anything to live for. And Kanan, who is just a complete saint in Malawi, he counseled Paul. He talked to him. He went to his house, visited him, say, like, what are you going to do for your life to turn it around? Really primed that, Kanan calls it mindset preparation, getting people ready to receive the grant. He talked to Paul, helped him figure out what he could do, and then Kanan worked with him, gave him the grant. It comes in two chunks, so you get an initial $100 grant with the business training. And then 3 months later, if the business is still in operation, they get an additional $50. So Paul went through that, and 3 years ago, I guess 4 years ago now, when we first went to Malawi, and when I say we, I mean Boyd, he came with me. So this is some stars on his shirt. We first went and saw him, and Paul told us, you know, I'm saving up my money to build a house. I really want to build a new house. I have thatching on my roof, so when it rains, it all comes in. I have a dirt floor, so that means that when the rain comes through, it's just a mud mess. So then this last year when we went back, there was his home. He said, come in. I want to sit. I want to show you my house. I want you to sit here with my family. I'm going to tell you my story. You can see there he is with his wife and one of his kids. You can see that there's concrete on the ground there. the bricks are fired bricks, so they won't melt. And I didn't get the top of the picture, but there's also iron roofing sheets on the top so that it won't get wet in the rain. And he has his Bible there too, letting you know that he goes to church every week now. So just to be able to be there and listen to that story, see his family nodding along as they said, like, I used to be a bum, and they just are all, yeah, like, that's really true. And then to be, you know, they offered us tea, and we sat there with him to listen, and then to be able to, you know, take the photo, have him, you know, shake our hands, and to be able to be there to encourage him, do that affirming work of saying, like, you know, this is really good. You've really made a change in your life. The next one. So this was another woman that we visited in Malawi, Mestina. This is in her home. And she has been a successful donut maker for a while. And so she's also part of the Savings and Loans Group, which is there in Malawi in Menyamula Village. And so she's been able to take loans and sort of grow her business, as well as they were able to build a second house that they're renting out to a school teacher who came to the village to teach. And so she was really proud to show me their new dishes. These are the new set that they had. And I just love that that's such a simple change. Maybe I don't even think about buying new pots, but to think about that difference of having something that you're proud to put on your stove every day, especially as you're cooking over the open fire, as they are. Go on to the next. And so just being in the village, doing the witnessing, is a real joy. It's fun. It's hard work because it's long days. It's, you know, I get hungry, I get cranky. But then, you know, someone offers us a donut and I'm in the right place again. this is, as we went along, I think we visited over 35, 40 houses. Boyd's saying more. In the 4 days that we were in Menyamula Village. And we just went from house to house and house and heard story after story after story of, this is what I've done. I'm starting my photography business. Now my husband can go back to work. Now my children can go to school year-round. And but it was also kind of a community event because we were there. You know, they sang a big song for us. And they all wanted, we had this truck that was lent to us by the National Savings and Loans Organization in Malawi, and they came with a driver. And so as we were going from house to house, like, people would just say, like, hey, can I tag along, or like however they said it in the language, and we just saw more and more people piling in the back. So like by the fifth house, they're just like crowded in the back, you know, passing around the donuts. And it was real, like, just, you know, Kanan explained to us, he's like, they just want to go visit their friends, they want to see, you know, how their friends are doing too. And so I could see that within the community, that the Savings and Loans Cooperative and the Small Business Fund together had really built this strong network, this community. Now there are over 150 people in the Savings and Loans Cooperative. They meet monthly. They have local groups within the village that they're all supporting each other. They're paying it forward to each other. They're buying, you know, collective things so that they can share them. And just to see that network and see that blossoming and that just explosion of change was amazing. And I think that that is probably something that Dell was co-creating and dreaming with God for years and years and years and years before we got to finally to see it. Oh, I'm at the end. I just have one more story. Go to the next one. This one is, and I was just reminded by this today in Rhythms as we did dancing to I'm Changing in My, Trading in My Sorrows, Giving It Up for the Joy of the Lord. And I remembered, I ran over to Boyd. I was like, this is one of the songs they're playing in Uganda. So we went to Uganda for a week. As I said, after Kenya, we had a week in Malawi, a week in Kenya, and a week in Uganda. And we are in the ruralest of rural villages. This was literally like, we asked Godfrey, how do we get there? We need to know how to, like, navigate to get there. And he said, well, you take this road, then this road, this road, then just ask someone how to get to this village, which we couldn't really pronounce. And we started asking people. I'm sure we were saying it wrong because everyone's like, where are you going? And we're like, oh, no. Like, we're going to get lost. So anyway, we're out beyond rural. And because we had all the coordinators from the different countries come to Uganda for a conference together, it was a big affair. They had an extra generator, so at night they could not only have lights for us for our meetings, they also had just about 45 minutes of praise music, and they would watch like music videos, and we're working on the computer. Because like those are all things that take electricity. And otherwise, there's absolutely nothing. So it was like everyone charged up their cell phones when this went on, turned on lights, put on the music. These are the speakers that are coming in on the back of the Boda Boda bike for us to rock out to. And so they would play the same set list every night for the week we were there, just, you know, giving it up for the joy of the Lord right there in the middle of nowhere. Stars, just more stars than I've ever seen before. And they told me, you know, it was just a moment of celebration. It was a celebration with the family there, with the community. And one of the coordinators told us, you know, guests bring meat. That's a saying, and I'm not sure which would, in Uganda. Godfrey, guests bring meat. And what that means is, you know, when the guests come, we bring out the best. We're a good hospitality to each other. They don't always have meat, but when the guests come, we put on our best. And so we got to be there for that best, for the singing, for the dancing, and then also for visiting and celebrating the change that we're seeing there. So that just is a huge blessing to me. That service is my prayer for the world. It's part of my building peace. It's part of let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. And so I just am honored to work with Spirit in Action and to be able to share that with you. And I have a million more photos and some really great video on the website. So I really do encourage you to check that out. I didn't do a blog post this week, but I usually do one every Tuesday, as I mentioned. So thank you very much for listening. And let's stand up for the 9 o'clock prayer and really mean it.